Hello and welcome to The Laydown, a Gibson's Bookstore podcast. I'm Ryan, my pronouns are she, her.
I'm Ashley, my pronouns are also she, her.
I'm Kate, my pronouns are also she, her, she, her.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi, Ryan.
First podcast of the new year.
Insert air horn sound here.
I do enough editing. I'm not adding sound effects. and it only took us till like the, you know, almost last day of the month to record.
Whatever.
But we're doing great.
It is still January.
It is still January, and maybe this will even go up in January. We'll see.
And everybody knows January doesn't count. It's a warm-up laugh.
It's a test month, and so far, I'd like to return it, please.
Yep. Turns out this January did not go as planned, so we're going to start the whole year over again. You heard it here first, folks.
Yeah. We're living in a dystopia. But
not the fun kind.
Not the fun kind.
No. Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
The really scary, bad, burning kind.
Yeah.
But, like, at least we have books, I guess.
Yay!
Yay, books.
Yay, books.
Thank books for books.
So, you know, I feel like usually the January episode is more like, let's reflect on the last year and our favorite books of the year. Yeah, we're not doing that this year. We're not gonna look back. We're gonna look forward, and we're gonna talk about hope punk and how hope is resistance and how we can, I don't know, what we're reading in the end times, I guess. Because, you know, that's what's happening. First, we will chit-chat about what we're reading right now and what we've read recently. And I promise not to talk about the too many books I've read since I last recorded this. Because that would be the whole podcast.
Is there such a thing as too many books?
Well, no, but it would be a 4-hour long podcast if
Welcome
I talked
to
about
Ryan Lee Reads a List, the podcast within a podcast.
Exactly. But I will talk about a few things. At the end of last year, I finished reading a new book by Pasha Mala called All You Can Kill. I'm obsessed with this author. Pasha Mala is not well known here. He's a Canadian author. I call him the Canadian Haruki Murakami because his books, it's that vibe, like surrealist fantasy question mark. His first book is available as like an audiobook. I got it as an advanced audiobook from Libre FM. It's only available in Canada. They do have physical copies, but not here.
Well, but maybe soon if we make Canada the 51st state.
I mean,
Yay!
Maybe soon. That would be one silver lining.
Books are only currently available in Greenland?
Oh. Pasha Mala's first book, or the previous one that I read, is called Kill the Mall. So it's like, kill them all, but it's about a mall. And
yes,
it's absurd and weird and liminal and just crazy. And I love it. There's a horse in the mall at one point. There's a swimming pool and a labyrinth. It's just great.
That's how I like my malls.
Same. And this one is called All You Can Kill. And it picks up at the very end of Kill Them All, in which our main character, who is never named, it's all first person, and he never tells us his name. He will take on monikers, but they are not his real name. We don't know his name. He and his associate, Kay Sohale, are flying themselves, not in a craft, just flying, levitating.
Ooh.
Over an ocean. They're just floating around, they're just flying, and then they
can we join them?
Right? They end up on a deserted island.
I love that for them. I'm very jealous.
They, like, pass a plane crash at one point, and they're like, should we stop and help? I don't know how we would do that. So no, I guess. And they end up on this deserted island, which is not, in fact, deserted. There is some sort of retreat happening.
Uh-oh.
A couple's retreat.
Oh no.
So they decide, for reasons, to pretend that they are a couple and be a part of this retreat, and oh, things go crazy from there. It is so weird, and there's something deeply weird about this couple's retreat. I mean, there's deeply weird things about most couples' retreats, but this one in particular is, like, extra weird, and it's great, and I just would giggle my way through my lunch break reading this book and occasionally read things out loud because Pashamala is just the funniest person on the planet, and I just, the way he, like, will list things in a paragraph, like, the main character will be like, we'll walk into a room that's filled with birds, and we'll then proceed to list, like, 45 different types of birds that he sees, but, like, most of them are not birds that exist in real life, right? And it just, it's that thing where it's like, oh, wow, they're listing a lot of things. Okay, this is a lot. Oh, it's come back around. This is hysterical, actually. Like, and it happens so often, and it's just, like, the funniest. I told our former coworker Reagan. Reagan, we miss you.
Reagan, we miss you.
Reagan, come back.
I told Reagan that this book reads the way she talks.
Ooh.
I was like, this is the closest book I've come to with your voice. Yeah. And so, just highly recommend. It's so weird, and I love it so much, and I genuinely might buy a Canadian copy of Kill Them All just so that I can make my friends read it, because I love it so much, and I just want it available here.
I thought maybe you were going to start a couples retreat. We'll all pair off and battle.
Yes. Ooh. Yes. And then we fight. Yes. I love that. So that's that one. I reread The Starless Sea by Erin Morgenstern, which I just needed some comfort in my life. And
I can't imagine why.
I know, it's, I don't know, just, I just was in the mood for some comfort. and that was even more delightful than the first time, because this time I knew kind of who the characters were and where we were going with it, and so I was able to just, like, really soak it in. So, you know, I'm still very happy with my Starless Sea tattoo and my Night Circus tattoo. haven't regretted those yet. Erin, please don't do anything weird.
We are begging you.
I am counting on you. I don't recommend getting tattoos based on books by authors who are still living. But so far, Erin hasn't let me down, so.
That's why mine is just the alphabet. I can rearrange the letters into whatever it is I love or hate at the moment and not have to feel bad about it.
I love that.
I got it when I was 22, so if I had gotten words of things that I loved when I was 22, it would probably be a real problem now.
Yeah.
But now,
yeah.
It's just the good old ABCs.
You know, I love that. I'm also really glad that I didn't get tattoos of any of the things that I was truly, like, obsessed with other than Alice in Wonderland in my 20s, because Lewis Carroll can't hurt me. He's long gone.
That's what he wants you to think.
Yeah, I mean,
don't read one of the books I just read.
No, like, I know he was deeply problematic, but he's dead, so it's okay.
But in the mirror-verse.
Oh, kids, just don't get tattoos. Just kidding. Get all the tattoos.
Just do what I do and only get tattoos in memory of dead things.
Yeah, there you go. That's what to do. And then I also read a collection of winter-themed horror stories called The Darkest Night, edited by Lindy Ryan. And it was great. and every single story was awesome, and it's got some of my faves in there. There's a Josh Malerman story, there's a Clay McLeod Chapman story, there's a Rachel Harrison story. They're all in there, and I love them all. Clay somehow made me at first afraid of a cardboard box, and then deeply excited by the evil cardboard box and the person that it might be taking down. It was a full roller coaster ride. And like
Clay part cat.
Well, yeah, a little bit. if you've ever met him, yeah, a little
bit. He's always sitting on the keyboard when you're trying to type.
He's just perched like a gargoyle on top of things.
Demanding to be fed. Come on, Clay.
Get it together, Clay. And then some things that I'm currently reading, our coworker Cheyenne recommended The Lamb by Lucy Rose, which comes out at some point. It's not out yet, but it's about cannibals and lesbians. Lesbian cannibals.
Mm, it's the best great. Kind
the best of
both.
Kind. Honestly, yeah. If you liked Bloom by Delilah S. Dawson, you should read The Lamb by Lucy Rose. And what's fun is that it's told from the perspective of the young child in the home, the daughter of a cannibal and her lesbian lover who becomes a cannibal with them, and it's real fun and real dark and
a feel-good family hit.
Yeah, definitely everyone will be fine if what I think is about to happen actually happens. Oh boy. Oh boy, we'll see. Feels like it's taken a big old turn. It's great. I'm also reading the next Christopher Golden book, which is called The Nightbirds, and there's something weird. There's some giant weird birds that might also be ladies or witches, and there's a boat that has, like, a bunch of trees growing up through it, and there's just, like, a lot of weirdness and vibes going on. I'm not very far into it, but it's very good so far, and we have an event for that in May, and I'm very much looking forward to it because Christopher Golden is the best. He's awesome, and he will be here with other authors. Who are we doing? Nat Cassidy is joining him, and Eric Nunnally, who is a lesser-known horror author, but he has a book, and I'm not going to remember the title of it, but it's about a black superhero, and it's a horror novel, and what more could you possibly want? He's awesome. So that's May 6th, I think, is that event, so everyone should come. It's going to be great.
Absolutely.
Speaking of Nat Cassidy, I just started his new one, When the Wolf Comes Home. I've been waiting for this arc for, like, months. Like, just waiting and watching other booksellers get it and just being like, where's my copy? And I finally emailed our rep, and I was like, give me a copy! And so he sent me a copy. And I started it on my lunch break the other day, and then immediately went, oh, I can't read this while eating. This is, no. So that's going to have to, I have to find a different time to read that one, because that can't be my lunch break book, because, ooh, it got real gross real fast. But I love Nat Cassidy, and I'm very excited to read this one.
So yes to cannibalism at lunch break.
Yeah.
But no to whatever this may be.
There was bodily functions happening, and it just was making me gag while I ate, and yep.
That's less than ideal.
I didn't want, I was like, no. It's not gonna bother me any other time. It's just while I'm eating. It's like how when I read Kosa, and there's just so much hair, and then I was eating, and then I pulled a really long one of my own hairs out of my mouth, and I was like, maybe I don't read this one while eating. Maybe I just don't, because that feels cursed. there are just some books you don't read on your lunch break.
I appreciate you not making yourself gag on lunch break, since I'm
usually you're next
sitting
to me,
right there. Yeah.
It'd be real bad.
It'd
be
bad
for
it.
Everyone. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I watched The Substance last night, and at one point started gagging, and I had to try to, like, cough and laugh at the same time to mask the sound of my gagging so that my husband wouldn't start gagging. Just I was like, no, I'm not gagging. I'm just, wow, Corey. It's fine. I'm desensitized for most things, but there are certain things that I am not. It's just not going to happen. And then the last thing I'm reading is called Our Winter Monster, which is by Dennis Mahoney. And I'm reading that because we are having a horror panel in February 18th. I forgot I had to enunciate on here. with Dennis Mahoney for Our Winter Monster, as well as E.K. Sathew for Youth Juice. Speaking of the substance, body horror, and let's see, Clay McLeod Chapman for Wake Up and Open Your Eyes, and Eric LaRocca for At Dark We Become Loathsome. It's gonna be a time, y'all.
Oh, it's gonna be great.
It's gonna be a great time. This is the little New England horror panel tour that myself and a couple other booksellers cooked up during NEBA last fall. We were just like, what if? What if we just asked some of our author friends and got them to come to our stores and only our stores? And it was just like a little mini tour through New England. Because a lot of times what happens is they pick one New England store.
That's not enough.
That's
not enough. We want them to come to all of our stores.
We're a real place, guys.
Yeah. You can't just go to Boston. You gotta come to other places, too. And so we cooked this up with the publicists and the authors, and we made it happen, and it's happening.
Yeah.
It's for real's happening. It starts next week, and it's crazy.
Are they all traveling in a big, spooky Partridge Family bus?
I'm choosing to believe yes. Mm-hmm. I'm choosing to believe that they are all cramming into Clay's minivan and traveling to all the stores in the Claymobile. That is...
It's full of sleeper coffins.
Yes, that is what I am choosing to imagine. What they're actually doing, I don't know, but it doesn't matter because that's what I'm imagining.
Yeah.
And we and will see them here on the 18th, and I'm very excited for that. But so Our Winter Monster by Dennis Mahoney, as far as I could tell, is about like a sentient evil blizzard.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. I know. That was, yeah. Yep. And it's like the snow is like there's like a crazy blizzard happening, and the snow seems to be like forming into this creature, which is then like picking people up and like moving them and like dropping them down.
Ooh.
And at one point it like freezes, like, it like touches a guy's arm, and then that arm is just frozen, and then it comes off. And it's bad. It's not good for that guy.
So I was like, it's a little bit The Mummy.
Yeah, yeah.
A little bit The Day Before Tomorrow.
Yeah.
After Yesterday. I don't know. Flash freezing.
Winter Monster Wretched Valley crossover.
Yes.
Ooh.
Yes. Yes, please, yes.
Yeah.
So that one's really fun so far. I'm having a good time. And it's like bouncing POVs, so you're like getting little pieces of the story, and you're like, what's happening? What is this thing? And everybody's like really scared and confused because obviously they're like outside in a blizzard and they're lost and it's dark and they don't know what's happening and no one will help them. And so they're all just like making dumb decisions, but it's like, I wouldn't make a better decision in this scenario.
No.
I also would just run blindly through the forest screaming. Like, yeah, yeah.
What other option is there?
What other option
honestly
is there?
Yep, just sit there silently.
Right?
Until it's over.
Too bad. It's gonna find you. Yeah, so that's where I'm at right now. Lots of darkness, a little bit of humor, a little bit of, like, warm, cozy read in the Starless Sea, but the rest is just dark, just darkness. It's, oh, wow, it's almost like in 2020 when I started reading horror regularly because I wanted to have some sort of control over the terror in my life. Weird.
Turns out we've got another winter of discontent.
Yeah, it's happening again! Hilariously, the last time I read The Starless Sea was just like January of 2020, so, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We're just having a big old repeat. Whee!
Huzzah.
What about you guys? What are you reading?
Well, let's see. I just finished a kid's book that I'm really excited about. It's called The Undead Fox of Deadwood Forest.
Yes!
It's a youth fiction. It's by Aubrey Hartman. Comes out on February 25th. And it's about a fantastic fox, but not Mr. Fox.
not
this fox's
that one.
Name is Claire. And he has a monocle and a cape. And he lives in an incredible little hut in the woods surrounded by nothing but a mushroom garden. And it's his job to guide the souls of animals to their next resting place.
Aww.
Like, he's the guide on the River Styx, but it's just a little fox with a lantern who gives you a cup of tree sap tea and then helps you figure out where you're supposed to go next. And everything is great. Tending his mushrooms, going to the dump to get people books that the rats saved for him. And then a badger ghost shows up and won't go away.
Oh my god.
How very on-brand.
Very on-brand. Yes, and there's hijinks, hilarity. It hits a lot of grief and death and loneliness things in the way that only kids' books really can, but not in a punishing way.
Mm.
It made me cry when they were being super nice to each other.
Aww.
Not, it wasn't just stacking on misery on misery. Well, I don't know. Maybe when I die, a fox will take me to the woods. That will be nice.
A girl can dream.
A girl can dream.
But I can confirm how much Kate loved this book, because on occasion we have parallel playtime on our lunch breaks, and we share a table in the cafe, and the noises that came out of Kate while she was reading this made me want to steal it out of her hands and start reading it myself.
On the last day I was reading it, I was definitely trying to hide the fact that I was crying across the table from Michelle when we were both eating lunch at daytime in the middle of the cafe. it was so good. I need a bunch of napkins for no reason.
For no reason.
I spilled my drink all over my eyes.
I hate when that happens.
But I think this could be a classic. So I'm calling it now. It's very good. The Undead Fox of Deadwood Forest.
Mm.
Then, also upcoming, the new one from Karen Russell of Swamplandia.
Yes.
And Vampires in the Lemon Grove and many other unsettling, magical swamp nastiness.
Yes.
She has one coming out on March 11th. It's called The Antidote. It takes place in the Great Depression, in the Dust Bowl. And not only have the banks gone bankrupt, but these women, prairie witches, who will hear all your secrets and keep them inside themselves and you don't remember them anymore, they've gone bankrupt too.
Oh no!
So all of these thoughts and memories and mysteries and creepy bad things that people in these towns have been doing and then hiding in these women, all that information is just out there.
Oh no.
It's infuriating and funny and says a lot about residential school system and the horrible way that we continue to treat Native Americans. I'm so glad Karen Russell's back. It's been a couple series of short stories, which she's so good at, but this is her first novel in a while.
Yeah.
And I am psyched.
That's awesome. I love her.
Yeah. And then I'm also reading right now Julia Armfield's Private Rights.
Ooh, yes.
Which I'm not as far in as I'd like to be, but I'm obsessed so far. And it's definitely a what happens when the world ends and we just keep going sort of book.
Mm-hmm.
They're literally building houses on stilts on top of flooded cities. And people are just trying to continue to live despite the horrors that are just hidden under the surface. So it's great.
It's a how-to guide.
It is. In 2020, I was definitely going for, that was probably the third time I read Station 11.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, all right, it's the end of the world, but I feel fine.
Yeah.
Read that again recently, thinking about Hope Punk and everything to feel better. This is the opposite of that. Mm. It's great, but it's the end of the world, and we didn't learn, and we're still making it worse.
Yeah, that sounds like us.
And speaking of the end of the world and making it worse, I'm also reading, this is a nonfiction piece by Dorian Lynskey. It's called Everything Must Go, The Stories We Tell About the End of the World.
Oh.
And it's all about media in general and the ways that we have taken on the anxiety of the world ending pretty much since we've been creating art.
Yeah.
It's really cool. There's a huge section in here right now that I'm obsessed with about how comic books and whatnot figured out atomic weapons before scientists did.
Of course.
And sci-fi fans were totally aware of what nuclear apocalypse could be long before just people living in the world, and it didn't come as a surprise to them. And also, so many sci-fi authors were being investigated and not quite imprisoned, but held against their will in hotel rooms because for some reason, why do you know so much about atoms and power and who told you this? What do you know?
Oh my God.
I don't know. I just made it up based on this comic book from 30 years prior. It's fascinating and infuriating, and like what you said before about going back to 2020. In 2020, I got really into nonfiction because I wanted to learn as much about everything else as I could, and it looks like I'm dipping into that again. So Dorian Lynskey's Everything Must Go, it's going great, but the world is not.
It sure is not.
Ashley?
All you people in your reading lots of things at one time, I'm a very hardcore monogamous reader. So my one current read is Love in the Time of Cholera.
Yay!
It's my little two-person best friend book club.
Aww.
Current book. Best friend is mad at me because I don't love it nearly as much as he does.
That's okay.
That's what I said. Book clubs are better when not everyone loves the book.
Exactly.
So if you just show up and say, I like it. I like it too. Then you shake hands and leave.
That's boring. The book is really beautifully written, which is not a secret. I don't love hopeless love stories.
No.
Yeah.
I'm sure it'll get better.
Everything will turn out fine.
Everything will be fine.
Fingers crossed.
Some other recent reads. Finished 2024 with a book that Kate had recommended much earlier in 2024, but my TBR piles are overwhelming. This Is How You Lose the Time War.
Yay!
I was trying to pad my yearly stats. Mm-hmm. Only reading one book at a time means I don't read nearly as many books as my husband does in a year. Not that we're competitive, but I was trying to boost my numbers, and that one is a shorty. I read it in an afternoon and loved it. Yeah. Immediately recommended it to everybody I know, starting with my mom, who did not love it, and that made me really sad.
Must have read it wrong.
That's what I said.
Yeah, my husband did the same thing. I love that book. I thought it was so beautiful, and his response was, meh.
My mom's like, I just don't think I'm smart enough for it.
Oh.
But I think she just, I don't know, bad headspace, or just thought it was going to be something that it isn't.
Yeah, maybe.
But I think she should try again. Everyone else should also read it, either for the first time or again, because it goes quick and it's delightful.
And one of those authors has a new book coming out on March 4th, too. Amal El-Motar has River Has Roots, which I have barely started, but of course it's perfect.
Of course. Another recent one was one that I borrowed from Ryan.
Yes.
Ring Shout.
Yes.
I was processing some online orders, and one of our manager's nieces had ordered that one, and when I went to grab it off the shelf, I was like, how have I not read this before? knew that Ryan was the place to go since we were selling our only copy of it, and I couldn't buy it right then and there. So borrowed it from her, read it in like 2 days. So good. What if the KKK were literal demons?
Yep.
Which, who's to say they weren't?
Yeah.
The jury's still out on this one.
Yeah. So that one was amazing. I normally read nonfiction. I did the opposite in 2020. Like, leading up to that was pretty exclusively a nonfiction reader, and then discovered escapism in novels, because reasons. But so now I force myself to alternate. Alternate between nonfiction and fiction. The two nonfictions that I finished recently and loved, my current staff pick, This Ordinary Stardust, when it had arrived end of summer, early fall, I forget. It's got a really pretty cover, and I like science and want to be better at being sad. And so, like, was intrigued by it, but didn't buy it, and then listened to the author on a podcast that my husband and I are obsessed with, and he's just so, so smart, but, like, so relatable, and some really terrible things happening all at once, and how he turned to science to, like, just rise above it, and, like, know that it's not the end of the world, even when it seems like it's the end of the world. And then The Light Eaters, which is about how plants are intelligent. Yeah. It's just not our form of intelligence, but, like, get over it. Words can mean different things at the same time. And so sort of, like, the fight between, like, the parts of society where it's like, no, they're plants, they can't be smart. And then the plant scientists being like, okay, but they are.
Literally are,
here
though.
Are the millions of reasons why.
Yeah. Allow me to show you the evidence.
Yeah.
As your houseplants glower at you.
I felt really self-conscious whilst reading it, because I am not the best plant mom. I was just pretty constantly telepathically telling my plants how sorry I am.
Valid. Yeah. Yeah.
They heard you.
I hope they did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I apologize to my plants a lot in my garden. I'm so sorry to my garden. It's not great. I try. We're doing our best.
Yes, we are.
Our best. My hope is that I will just turn my children into good gardeners, and then they can do it.
Ah, yes.
Solid plan. That's my plan right now. So, yeah. All right. Let's talk about Hope Punk a little bit. So this came about, who made the display?
I think Kat made the display.
Kat made the display. So we have a bunch of awesome displays in the store right now, and one of them is Hope Punk, and the sign says, "Books that remind us that hope is resistance." And it has a quote from Alexander Roland that says, "Hope Punk says that genuinely and sincerely caring about something, anything, requires bravery and strength. It's about standing up and fighting for what you believe in. It's about standing up for other people. It's about demanding a better, kinder world." And I think we could all use that right now. So we thought, given the everything, we would talk a little bit about some books that, you know, give us hope and make us feel like we're fighting for something. A lot of the ones that are on the display are ones that would immediately come to my mind when thinking about this. So basically, like, anything by Becky Chambers.
Right? Yep.
She's just, like, the Hope Punk of it all. Like, she did, like, Psalm for the Wild Build, Prayer for the Crown Shy, Long Way to a Small Angry Planet, like, just killing it. Just
all so delightful.
Yes.
And you learn so much about real things that are happening in our current world that Becky Chambers has just put a futuristic lens on that said, hey, we can learn, you guys.
Yeah.
We can see what's going on and we can take steps to change these things.
Yeah.
And just, there's a little bit of everything in Becky Chambers. My favorite thing ever, Robots Learning How to Feel and Be People shows up a lot.
It's so
in
sweet.
Becky Chambers. End of Life Plans While in Space. really good restaurants. It's all there.
Get on board with all of that.
Absolutely.
So cozy.
Check. Yeah, she's great. On a similar note, like the Murderbot Diaries.
Oh, yes.
Martha Wells, which are like that, but with like a darker, funnier vibe to them, which is just, you know, you've got your Murderbot, who's like, that's their whole job.
But yep. That's what I want to be when I grow up.
But they're just kind of like, ugh, I just want everyone to leave me alone.
They just want to sit in their closet and watch the same soap operas over and over and over again. And I love that.
I love that for them.
So relatable.
And
true.
When a sentient spaceship wants to be their friend, the spaceship learns about them by watching them watch the soap opera.
And, like, that's so cute. Yeah. That's so wholesome.
That reminds me so much of interactions that I had with my former students.
Yeah.
Like, let me watch you see the thing that I love and vice versa.
Yeah.
So we can learn about how different beings like things in different ways.
Absolutely. And I think we say that a lot in this job of, hi.
Sorry, it's me.
Yeah.
Ryan, we don't have a waiting room in the Zoom calls, do we? If we start the Zoom call, people just join?
I think so.
Okay, thanks.
Good talk.
My dad.
Don't even edit that out.
I'm not going to leave that in.
Interrupted our fearless leader.
Go away, Michael. I don't even remember what I was saying. It's something that we see in this job of, like, when a bunch of us read the same book and then we get to, like, experience each other reading it.
Yes.
And, like, different reactions to it. And, like, I find that, like, I always find this really funny because Elizabeth and I will often read the same, like, romance novels or the same, like, sci-fi fantasy novels, and we will have completely different takeaways from the books. And I find it so funny the way, like, the differences in our reading. Like, I'm very vibey. I'm just like, oh, I don't know, I liked the whole vibe of it, and I liked the main characters. And she's like a very almost like analytical reader, and she'll be like, oh, I really liked their strategy of doing this, and she'll have like specific examples, and I'm like, I remember nothing from the book except that I liked it. Like, it is so funny, but it's like a great way to be like, yeah, that's how our brains are. Like, we have very different brains coming at these books. So yeah, I just think that's such a sweet, and again, like, oh, like, empathy and, like, learning about each other.
Yeah.
Like, oh my god, community.
A big part of those books, too, is learning how to give and receive empathy in a system where that is a thing that has never existed for you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Murderbot is really struggling with these do-gooder scientists who want to treat Murderbot like a person.
Yeah.
And Murderbot says over and over, thank you, but I'm not a person. and they're all figuring it out together. And they're, super violent.
Which is, you know, cathartic.
Uh-huh. Ooh, there are some harvesting machines.
Oh, man. Let's see. What are some other ones? I haven't read this one yet, but I'm so glad it's on the list, because The Last Gifts of the Universe by Riley August, we saw them present at NEBA, and they are just the cutest human.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
They're so cute. And they were just like, what if I wrote a book about a cat in space? And so they did that, and that's what it is. I don't know anything beyond that. That's all I need to know. It's about a cat in space.
Yeah,
it's delightful.
What do you need to
the cat's
know?
Name is Pumpkin.
Of course it is.
And
yes.
Has his own little space suit.
Yes.
Oh. And don't worry. The cat is fine.
Excellent.
Yes. Everything is fine with the cat.
Beautiful.
It's these two siblings who scour the universe looking for clues in dead technology from civilizations that have come and gone.
Mm-hmm.
Just trying to figure out what happened, what will happen next. Mm-hmm. They run into some very Team Rocket-style mercenaries who work for a big company who are trying to get that same information, where these guys are humble librarian archivists. Mm-hmm. And really, the siblings, when they're not chasing secrets through space, just want to microwave frozen pizza in their spaceship and play first-person shooter video games and pet their cat.
Incredible.
It's
sold.
Yeah, right? Incredible.
I know we keep saying Becky Chambers, but it is Becky Chambers core.
Yeah.
I saw the cover and went, ah, Becky Chambers! But it's delightful. Oh, yeah. It's delightful.
Yeah. I know that you guys also have some books on your list, so feel free to jump in.
Sure. So I think Lydia Millett's Children's Bible is on that display, too.
Okay.
This is a...
Oh, yeah.
This whole hope punk thing is something that I loved and didn't know it had a term. Mm-hmm. Like, when we put together bookseller bundles last year of these books describe your vibe, yeah, or what have you, I had picked all it's the end of the world as we know it, but I feel fine.
Yeah.
Things went bad, but we learned. And Lydia Millett's Children's Bible is one of those things. It's told through the point of view of a group of kids who are elementary school through maybe 12, 13 years old, and their parents are lush maniacs devolving into nothingness at this gross party. Meanwhile, floods are rising and the kids band together and kind of save everybody.
Wow.
It's really, really
That's amazing.
Sweet.
Aww.
Yeah, I loved it a lot. And then, speaking of kids, my other books for this same vibe are kids' books. Mm-hmm. So, The Last Zookeeper came out last year. It's by Aaron Becker.
Oh,
and it's a funny thing for me to talk about because it has no words. It's all pictures.
Yes.
It's a robot in a flooded world who is floating all over the place, collecting bits and bobs to make a boat, and then finding animals and moving them to areas with more animals like themselves,
oh,
or more dry
hero.
Land, or it's just, it's going to make you cry, and it's so pretty and wonderful. And since it has no words, it's really great for handing to a kid or an adult, a friend,
yeah,
anybody. Kids' books are for everybody, not
Absolutely.
Just because I'm a kids' books person. Just handing it off and seeing what story they tell with those
Ooh,
words
yeah.
is really cool. Then Erin and Trotta Kelly's The First State of Being, which just won the Newbery Award! Yes, hooray! Also the author of Hello Universe, yes. Double Yes Hooray!
Yes.
This one is a lot of fun because the end of the world at hand is Y2K.
Oh my god.
Yep, so the characters in this book are about my age when Y2K happened, and a time traveler from now has showed up in the parking lot behind their house to warn them about Y2K isn't what you think it is, but here are some other things for you to work on.
Wow!
And there are also really cool cats in that one.
Incredible.
So, yeah, if there's sci-fi and cats, I'm on board.
Absolutely.
And then the other kids' book that I have right now that I'm super excited about, The Flicker by H.E. Edgeman. There's been a solar storm. Nothing on Earth can grow anymore.
Oh.
There's allegedly land somewhere where seeds are growing again, and this found family mix of older kids and very young kids are trying to find one of their grandparents and relying on native wisdom and folklore in the area to both restart growing things again and to hold on to their family lines at the end of the world. And it's beautiful.
Mm.
It is definitely up to be adapted into some sort of multi-part series, and I hope they keep it exactly the way it is, because it's just lovely. Aww. But yeah, kids' books have these vibes too.
Absolutely.
Yeah, teach them somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. We
had the dystopias, we had the Hunger Games, and
yeah. Oh yeah, we started early.
Yeah.
Was it the Margaret Peterson Haddocks, yep. Among the Hidden, and
yep.
City of Ember?
Oh yeah.
The Giver, the ultimate
the
kids'
Giver.
Dystopia.
Yeah. Yeah, we've been preparing for the end of the world. Forever.
I think you can definitely tell who read The Giver in elementary, middle school, and who did not.
Yeah.
Yep, it's a pretty easy tell.
Yeah. You can definitely tell who didn't do their reading homework. Yeah.
My hope punk are not necessarily super hopeful, but more along the how to guide lines.
Yeah. Also important.
Although I do have Station 11 on my list.
Yes, Station 11 forever.
For sure on that display.
Yeah.
I made the mistake in 2020 of reading that for the first time, as well as The Dog Stars by Peter Heller, which were both like, ooh, the world ended because of a flu-like pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what happened. So I also needed a little escapism from my escapism that year.
Yeah.
I retreated back to nonfiction probably at some point, but all both still very good books. And Peter Heller's newest one, Burn, also very relatable. End of the world as we know it, and for the reasons we actually know it in real life. The country has fallen to pieces and gone to war with itself, and states are seceding, and they know nothing about it because they're in the woods, and then they come out of the woods from their boys' hunting trip and are like, what the hell just happened?
Wow.
How long were we out there? Wow.
Also, last year, I had Parable of the Sower on my list for a million years, and then was like, well, now's the time, because it starts off set in 2024, so that's fun. Not fun. Too real. Very upsetting. But, you know, they find a way to carry on and be okay. So still recommend that one. A little bit of some throwbacks on my list. World War Z.
yes.
Which, if you just want to pretend that the world is ending because of zombies instead of why it really is, that was a great place to start.
Yep.
I still have nightmares about that book. There are a couple stories that stuck with me, and I haven't picked it up again since the first time I read it in college, but there were times that I had to put it down for a couple days, and I still think about stories from that book.
Yeah, ooh. It's so good.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Why can't that be our...
Right.
And then another oldie but goodie, Fahrenheit 451.
Yeah.
Oh, we are basically doing without the flames.
Yeah.
Book banning is basically the same thing, and we are, for reasons, trying to take away all of the best books from people. I don't understand what we as a society collectively are doing with our lives.
No. No idea.
Nope.
We are here at the bookstore being like, we have them! Come get them!
Please come buy them. They're very good and teach you things.
Yeah.
Yep.
If a book is being banned, there's a pretty good chance that you should actually read it.
Yes.
Because what are they trying to hide from you?
I've been talking for the last few years about building a banned book little free library for my front yard. I feel like this summer might be
the time
to actually make it happen.
I went to a music festival this summer that specifically had a banned book little free library on the grounds.
Cool.
It was awesome.
Nice.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
It's oof. Yeah. I mean, I've talked about this on the podcast before, but we put up a banned books display a few years ago, and we have never taken it down.
Yep.
I often get questions as to why we don't just have a full section.
Yeah. Well,
you're
in it. That's the store.
Yes.
My friend.
Welcome. Welcome.
You're in the banned books section.
Yeah. Pen America just published the most challenged picture books of 2023, 2024, and we have most of them, don't worry.
Yeah.
And I'm putting in an order for the other ones that we are out of at the moment. Just so you can know that, hey, we are still challenging picture books because they have a butt in them. And picture books because a character's grandfather is wearing what might be a pride pin the background of an image.
How dare you?
Yeah.
If anyone comes for butt or face, I will fight them to the death.
Same. Butt or face is the greatest thing to happen to literature
ever.
Fight us all. If you are not aware of butt or face, there's also butt or face 2, Revenge of the Butt.
It's true.
Where you are shown photographs of an animal's butt.
Or face.
And they put little googly eyes on it to throw you off. Yep. And you have to guess, is this a butt? Is this our face?
Yep.
And we have yet to find a young child, a teenager, an adult, a grandparent who has not laughed at butt or face.
It's so good. It's one of my kids' favorite books. We just read it again like 2 nights ago. And the howling cackles that were coming out of my children. And Fina has it memorized, so she knows. She gets it cold every time. And it's so funny, because she'll just be like, that's a butt. And then we'll turn the page and be like, told you, that's a butt. And it's just great. It's just so funny. Oh. And sometimes she'll be like, that looks like a butt. But that's a face. It's so good. It's so funny.
It's a decoy butt.
I love butt or face.
Oh, butter face forever.
It's so good. Another Hope Punk book that I love so dearly is Project Hail Mary by Andy Weir.
Mm.
Longtime listeners of the pod will recall that Andy Weir was on the podcast for Project Hail Mary years ago.
Wah, 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 wah. Air horn.
And he talked about how the rights for the movie were happening, and I don't even know if Gosling had been cast yet, but we talked about that. That book is just a doomed space mission, basically, but he befriends a little alien robot guy. I think he's just an alien. I don't think he's a robot. He's a little alien, and they start to figure out a common language so that they can communicate, and the little alien guy, I forget, what does he do? He does something really cute, he claps, or he does something with his hands to be yay! And it's so cute.
It's like Wally in his trash can.
Exactly. It is so cute. It's been years since I read it, but I still get the warm fuzzies when I think about it. And it's one that I feel like The Martian gets talked about so much with Andy Weir, and The Martian, rightfully so, is amazing. But I liked Project Hail Mary even more. It is so sweet and full of hope. And it's just another, brilliant guy in space being like, okay, this is a doomed mission. How do I make it not doomed? And then also befriending this little guy. This little guy.
Everybody just needs a little guy.
Everyone needs a little guy.
Yep. You get some hope, you get a little guy, and you get a butt.
And then you're
going to be fine.
You're going to be fine. Yep. So, I don't know, man. The world is garbage right now, but we have books, and you have Gibson's, which is full of like-minded individuals who you can come and vent to, or just be in a safe space and a warm environment. And we can just commiserate. Or we can pretend that the outside world is not happening. We can do that too.
We can
give you some escapism, whatever you need.
Here
on Gibson's Island, everything is fine because we have books. It's January, and we've lived 1,000 years in this January. But you know what? Victorian Psycho comes out on Tuesday.
Yes, it does! Woo, woo, woo!
And that is already my favorite book of the year. Don't tell my other author friends who all have books coming out this year. There's so many, but how could you possibly top Victorian Psycho? It's so good.
It's so good and so gross and so wonderful.
And it's cathartic and funny. And I made so many of us here read it because I had to know if it was actually funny or if I was broken.
Two things can be true.
Turns out we're all broken and it's hilarious.
I cackled my way through that book, and we have a virtual event with Virginia Feito on February 11th at like 1 p.m. Eastern.
Oh, yes.
Because she's in Spain. So, you know, it's going to be a weird time, but everyone should join us. It's going to be great. Come by Victorian Psycho because it's like our favorite book.
It's so good. It's living in an Edward Gorey drawing that goes completely off the rails.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Yeah. That's exactly what it is. Yeah. It's a psychopathic governess who just, she's got a penchant for murder of the rich, awful people.
Yeah.
And she's creative. And also, because she's the help, no one notices that she's picking them off one by one. It's great! Oh, I love her.
She does horrible things to horrible people who deserve it.
Yes.
And she is delightfully horrible, too.
Yes. Yeah. And she knows it.
It's great.
It's hilarious.
And it's super short. You can read it in an afternoon.
Absolutely. It is delightful. And so many of us here have read it, including people who do not, you know, read horror. I mean, John read it and loved it. Heather's reading it and loving it. Cheyenne read it and loved it. Kate read it and loved it. Mm-hmm. Reagan read it and loved it. Like, it's just, we're just here, it's your turn. We're just passing the arcs around, but pretty soon we'll have the finished copies, which we can just be like, now it's your turn.
Ryan did place the bound manuscript in front of me with the utmost reverence.
I did.
I felt chosen.
You were chosen. I was reading it and I was like, I need Kate to read this.
The arsenic green glow of Victorian Psycho fell upon my face.
Yeah, and it was just, and normally it's not something that I ever would have picked up, but our Norton rep, Kelsey, who I've known my entire time as a bookseller, she handed it to me and she said, this is the closest thing that Norton has to a horror novel. I think you'll love it. I felt sick reading it. And I was like, awesome. And so I started it being like, I'm going to read this for Kelsey. Cause like, I feel an obligation. And then I got two pages in and I was like, this is no longer for Kelsey. This is for me. This book was written for me specifically. yeah. And hopefully if you come in at any point in February and take a look at our staff pick shelf, it'll just be a lot of copies of Victorian Psycho with different reviews.
You really can't miss with Victorian Psycho.
You really can't miss. It is the Indie Next pick of February, which is great. They didn't use any of our blurbs. But
rude.
That just means that enough people submitted blurbs that they had so many to choose from. So I did make everyone from Gibson's who had read it submit a blurb. I watched them do it. Even Fal read it and enjoyed it. So anyway, that's my little Victorian Psycho soapbox. Please buy it and read it and come to our event and just revel in it with us, because that's how we're coping right now, is with Victorian Psycho and Hope Punk.
If you could use a good cackle, this is the book for you.
Oh goodness.
I couldn't read it at night anymore because I was keeping my husband up.
Yeah. So
every couple pages I was going, ha, 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 yeah. No. Ooh.
Same.
Ah!
Same. My husband said that he's never witnessed a book affect me so much as Victorian Psycho, and I was like, based on everything I read, that's crazy. But also, yeah, I believe it. Oh goodness. All right, so yeah, hopefully that makes you guys feel a little better, and feel free to like come in and talk to us about your coping techniques for right now. And so now I'm gonna do our fun little wrap-up stuff that you should all continue listening to. Don't stop it early. Because first up, we have a reminder about our partnership with Libra FM. Our listeners who are new to Libra FM can receive 2 digital audiobooks for the price of 1 credit by using the code LAYDOWN at checkout when they start a new membership. Yay! Do it! We love them. They love us. I just ordered new bookmarks from them. It's going to be great.
Nice.
You can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. For a shoppable list of all the books we've discussed during this episode, you can click the link in our show notes or go to gibsonsbookstore.com/laydown-books. And I will double check to make sure that is actually the link on our new website.
If you find a treasure map, that was supposed to be there.
That was on purpose. Mm. But when in doubt, just, you know, come into the bookstore. We have a display. Listen, I have on here, make sure you're following us on your favorite social media platforms. I don't know, man. I don't know what's going on with social media right now. Sign up for our newsletter, I guess.
Just come by and we'll give you a Polaroid of us holding a book.
Yeah.
And you can hang it on your wall.
Yeah. Gibson's is on everything. We're trying to use Blue Sky more. We're still on the other ones. Not Twitter. Michael uses our Twitter now for his own lurking, just to see what's happening
Research. Over
there. Yeah, we've got Instagram, we've got Facebook. Yes, it's all terrible. There is a Gibson's newsletter that I send out on Tuesdays, so like sign up for that if you want to like know about events and things that are going on. The Laydown has social media, and yeah, sometimes I use it. But really, just follow Gibson's everywhere. That's your best bet. And, yeah, who knows? I'll put links in the show notes so you can make your own choices and follow your heart. Mm-hmm. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, because we're wildly inconsistent. And consider leaving us a nice review, please.
And thank you.
And thank you. Until next time, we'll see you in the bookstore. Bye!